Podcast in NPR land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies. And it is that time of the year again, everyone. The Oscars have taken over everything at the Front Row, and we've got so much content to give you, including our Oscar spotlights. And we are kicking it off with a very interesting episode and how we're going to do that today. But before we get into that, just know that I am Jeremy Gegner, the editor-in-chief. Happy to be here with you in another award season. And joining me, as always, my cohort and my favorite person to do podcasts with, my wife, Sarah Baltusevich Gechner, the notorious SBG. What is up?
Not too much.
Yeah? You've been fighting off a cold recently for, like, I think 3 years now. So how's that going for you?
Great. Not really at all, though. Still here.
Still here. And you know what? She is still out here talking movies for you, the fans. That is the dedication of the SBG. Coughing all the way. All right. So as I said, we're going to do a very interesting kind of episode here to kick off the Oscar spotlights this year, as well as do a little bit different version of our Oscar spotlights, which I'll explain at the end. But Sarah and I, most recently, when we had a little bit of downtime over the holiday break, we got to go and see Greta Gerwig's new adaptation of Little Women. I believe the 2000th film version of Little Women that has been released in theaters. Is that an accurate count there?
Yeah, at least
2000. Rather than, look, I mean, usually on these spotlights, we will, like, go in depth on the plot of the movie and such, and we don't really need to do that with Little Women. I'm pretty sure you all know the main beats. But Sarah and I are actually really big fans of the last time a big screen, big time screen adaptation of Little Women came out, which was 25 years ago in 1994, starring Winona Ryder, Susan Sarandon, a very young Christian Bale. Who am I missing there?
Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, yeah.
Claire Danes,
yeah. A lot of talent in that one, a lot of young talent. And so what we thought we would do here is give you kind of a little mini review of this movie as a whole, but then do a more of a compare contrast of these two big screen adaptations to see what we liked in both of them, which ones we didn't, which roles we thought were played better, how the stories unfolded and stuff like that.
Excuse me.
So we're just going to kind of get into that and go back and forth a little bit on that. Do you have anything to add before we dive into that, Sarah?
Nope. Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, so...
Excuse my hacking and sneezing.
Yeah, well, let's just get into it here with the most recent adaptation here, Greta Gerwig's 2019 release. This one stars Saoirse Ronan, Emma Watson, a recently Academy Award nominated Florence Pugh, which I'm sure Sarah's going to have some words about, Eliza Scanlon, Laura Dern, Timothy Chalamet,
Meryl Streep,
Chris Cooper. Very good cast that Greta Gerwig has directed here. And of course, Greta Gerwig wrote this film as well, adapted the novel into the screenplay. And she is, of course, fresh off of her Best Director nomination. I want to say 2 years ago for Lady Bird. Maybe it was 1 year, but I think it was two. So, Sarah, let's just start here and just say, like, you are a huge fan of Little Women. You've read the book a ton. You really love the 1994 version. What did you think overall of this version of Little Women, the latest one to hit theaters?
I mean, I didn't have a problem with it as a whole. I liked it. Mm-hmm. I thought that some of the roles were really well cast. I thought it maybe had, like, I don't know what the word, but sparser, darker tone.
Sure.
Than previous installments.
It's got a rougher hue to it. Yeah, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I miss some of the. I don't know. It's hard for me because I'm like a huge fan of the 1994 one. Mm-hmm. My grandma used to read the book to me, and then she took me to see it in 94 when I was 9 years old. And then I had it on VHS and I just like watched it to death. And it just had like, it had such like a beautiful score.
Yes.
Like, and you know, it was like really like, I don't know. It was just really relatable. Like the camaraderie between the sisters and things, which is the one thing that I was really kind of lacking with this one.
Yeah.
But there were aspects of this one that I did really like. I liked the focus on Jo's writing. I liked the focus on her being able to bring her book to light on her own without the help of a man.
Right.
You know, I enjoyed Meryl Streep's performance as Aunt March. I mean, you can't not like Meryl Streep.
Right, it's Meryl Streep. She could play Batman and be the right choice.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, there were aspects of it that I liked. I did like Saoirse Ronan quite a bit as Jo. It's sad, but the other sisters always kind of get
pushed
aside for her, especially Beth. Poor Beth.
Yeah, poor Beth.
I really liked Chris Cooper.
Yes, yes.
As Mr. Lawrence, Lori's grandfather.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I liked it overall. It takes a different aspect as far as the way it's told, jumping back and forth between the present and the future, which was effective in some places, but ineffective in others.
Yeah, and I mean, that is definitely what sets this film apart from other adaptations of this story.
Right, because I remember you, like, right when it started, you're like, wait, isn't this, like,
like, the end of the book?
And I was like, yeah, it has to flash back.
Yeah, and so it's an interesting tact because, as you said, like, we don't really need a linear version of this story again because we've had that many times.
No, I mean, it's not...
So, I mean...
It's not a terribly complex story.
No, but, you know. But I mean, like, the thing that I appreciated about the way Gerwig jumps from... Basically, kind of, I guess it starts like what, like 80% of the way through the book, something
maybe
like that?
Maybe a little farther, 80, 85. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it starts like towards the end of her New York tenure where she's already about to go home to see Beth die.
Yeah,
basically.
Which is the kind of catalyst part of what's happening in the present day. So, yeah, and we jump around to the different characters and see their like lives now. And then the flashbacks, as you said, give us kind of the big beats of the book that we remember, that most people remember, you know, taking the food, the Christmas feast to the poor family.
There's certain marks you have to hit. You have to hit, you know, you have to hit the Pickwick Society. You have to hit the Hummel family.
Uh-huh.
You have to hit Beth's piano. You have to hit, you know, Lori proposing to Joe.
Yeah, the hanging out in the Lawrence house and Mr. Lawrence awakening.
Father coming home from the war. Mother going to Washington because father's wounded. Joe selling her hair.
Yeah.
There's certain beats you have to hit.
The burning of the pages, of course.
The manuscript and an ice skating fall.
Yeah. And I mean, like, but that's the most interesting thing about this film is that Gerwig knows that we know these things so well that she can play with it. You know, you can play around with the storytelling medium here. And I think that, yeah, you're right. Like, there's some parts where it's fine, you know, where it's just kind of like, okay. There's some parts where it's really, really great, like when they're contrasting Beth's first run with the fever and then her second run with the fever. The way that they do Beth's death in this is really, really, I think, effective because of the structure that Gerwig uses to tell the story here.
Sure, but see, then what I don't like about it is that I feel like once Beth's death has happened, then that should be it for Beth. But I don't like that she dies in the present flashes, but then there's still flashbacks to her being alive.
Yeah, and I get that.
And it just kind of throws you for a loop, because it's like, literally, the scene after she dies is a flashback to Meg's wedding,
where they're all alive.
And it's just like, wait.
Yeah, exactly. I get that.
I just feel like you lose some of, like, the steam of the story. Like, that, like, Beth's death is kind of what propels her to really to write Little Women. And it's just like, I don't know, I just feel like you lose some of the momentum when you're still flashing back, like, ah, that's okay. Beth will be here again in a minute. We're going to flash back. I don't know.
We don't laugh at Beth's death, people.
No.
It's terrible. It's one of the most heartbreaking things literature has ever produced.
All I can think of is the episode of Friends where Joey and Rachel switch their favorite books, and she reads The Shining and he reads Little Women.
Little Women.
And they get in a fight, and he's like, he tells her some big spoiler of the end of The Shining, and then she goes, Beth dies. And he's like,
go and find that episode of Friends if you haven't. It's really good. So I mean, I totally get that. And like, what I do appreciate, you're right, though, is that they really give Joe a lot more of a feminist streak in this one. You know, like there's a fierce independence that Saoirse Ronan just kind of naturally exudes in that character. And obviously, kind of the biggest thing with this movie is that according to the director, Greta Gerwig, neither of us actually quite got this.
I mean,
it
lingers there, but you're also just like, are you messing with Louisa May Alcott right now?
I guess she is. But I mean, like, the whole movie is kind of messing with Louisa May Alcott But yeah, so the end of the book, you know, Joe is kind of like in the book Little Women, the novel Little Women, Joe marries the professor. They have kids, I'm assuming.
He works at the school.
Yeah, he works at the school, and basically kind of your Everyone Lives Happily Ever After
version
of it.
It's kind of a neat little bow, yeah.
Yeah, and so in this one, they really kind of use that in there's a couple of scenes that they add into this movie that's not in the normal narrative of Joe meeting with the publisher of the book. And I thought those scenes were really, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of talking about, because the first one, she's just trying to sell a story just to get some money for the family.
Yeah, I mean, it shows... I mean, the obvious struggle for women.
Yeah, it shows the intense patriarchal bent of the times. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they write this story. He thinks it's good. He's marking the hell out of it, but he's a publisher. He probably does that to everyone. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's that one line that both you and I latched onto.
Like, I pay, you know, 30 for this.
He's like, I pay 25 for this, 30 if it's good. For that, I'll give you 20. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, that's just that whole disparity of, you know, a woman wrote this, so I'm not going to pay my full price for it.
I don't have to.
But then by the very end, she's written this story that his daughters are so infatuated with, which I thought was another great scene. Mm-hmm. And he calls her in and he's trying to do like the publisher hustle, basically. You know, he's trying to be like, you know, yeah, there's this and this, and then we can do this and stuff. He's kind of trying to number dump on her a little bit to try and do this, but he's also trying to like buy the rights in perpetuity from her. But
because he knows that it's good. But she's smarter than him.
Yeah, but by this time she's grown in confidence and she's grown smarter that the tables have literally now turned and she is just, you know, she's kind of got the upper hand on him and she knows it, which is interesting because in a way it kind of ends with like a little bit of a mutual respect for each other.
Yeah.
But you know, the book ending is now in this film version. The thing that Joe compromises on to her publisher to end the book Little Women, that Joe is writing here. So he's like, oh, you know, they're not, like the publisher says, nobody's going to read it if, you know,
the heroine doesn't get married.
Nobody wants to see the lead of the book like end up a spinster and out of love and stuff. So she literally just kind of looks at it and is like, okay, fine. You know, and we see the scene play out that we think is what, because it's what we've always known the end of Joe's story to be, but in this movie it's said as like, no, that's just the fairy tale that's there. And according to Greta Gerwig in interviews, Joe doesn't end up with the professor. She just simply opens the school. The professor, I guess, just still happens to work there, but they are not a couple. She is an independent person that runs this school. So Sarah, you, as I said, have a much bigger connection to the book and the source to me. Knowing that, I mean, I know both of us didn't get that when we saw it in the theater, but afterwards,
I think it was expected. I just think it, I mean, it's like, it's Little Women. Like, that's what happens.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's like saying, like,
Batman wears the cape. I mean,
right.
Come on.
I mean, that's just, I mean, you know, Harry Potter beats Voldemort. That's what happens. Like, that's.
He doesn't make a deal to beat him. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay. So, like, knowing that that's what Gerwig was going for and that's what she put there, like, how does that hit you now? Like, knowing, like, looking back on those final scenes, you know, do you think that's a mistake? Do you think that that doesn't work?
Well, I mean, I guess I can see it two ways. Like, I am not, yes, I'm a woman, but I'm not a huge perpetrator of being a crazy feminist and and having to have be an independent woman. I'm a very independent woman. I happen to be married to you.
Sure.
That doesn't change who I am, what my career path is, what my choices in life are. I just think, I mean, I think it's fine if that's what they want to do with it and she wants to end up not married to the professor, especially in this version because they don't let the professor do shit.
Yeah, they really do. You said they do.
They do
dirty.
Him dirty. They do. And it's like, and yeah, so if this is the version where you're not going to have her end up with him, then that's fine.
Well, yeah.
Because of the way that
because
his character
that's
is treated.
Yeah, like if you're going to go that route, then this movie makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
Because yeah, he doesn't do a lot. He doesn't play as bigger
it doesn't
role
really it wouldn't really even make sense to me for them to end up together because it's just kind of like okay. But also I don't see why having her married takes away from her Jonas.
Sure. Yeah. And that's I guess that's kind of the everlasting struggle of people who love this story and this movie, you know, like because like I said, you and I didn't get it, so it's not very overt.
Yeah,
it's not overt at the end because he's there,
yeah,
you know, celebrating
with
them.
She looks at him like, you know, with a nice, loving look.
Not, yeah, so I mean, you definitely get the sense that
you don't
see
a wedding or rings or, but like she meets him at the train station and
well,
tells him,
or is that just
in the book
what they're saying to what she like a visualization of what she's telling the publisher?
I don't know.
I think that's what Gerwig is saying. She meant it to be so. I guess, you know, and I mean, look, it doesn't take away from anything. I still think this is a very wonderfully made movie. I think it more than earns its Best Picture nomination.
It's very good. It's very well done. It has a great cast. It has a lot of nice moments. Just the scene of of her book being published at the end is really neat.
Really great. Like, they go into, like, a lot of details about how books were made back then, mm-hmm. and it's like, yeah, you can imagine why that was such an investment.
Watching her, like, be handed her copy is pretty cool. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a lot of moments that are very nice. But, yeah, I mean...
And we'll get
yeah. And if I didn't have it to anything to compare it to, then I probably would think it was really even better.
Sure.
So
yeah, and I mean, we'll get into specifics with the comparison that we're about to do.
But there's a few things about this movie that I just really did not connect with.
Yes, and I know what one of those is going to be, and we will get into that. So yeah, but I mean, like this, you know, this earned 6 Oscar nominations. I think all of them are good. Greta Gerwig didn't get a director's nomination, which is kind of, you know, miffing a few people as there's no female directors there. And look, I mean, I think that, you know, if you're going to kind of mess with the chronology of this alive, you know, like this well-known story, this iconic story, really, you know, like it is kind of a task to make sure that we all understand what you're doing with that. And some of those hit really well. Like I said, the juxtaposition of Beth beating the fever and then succumbing to the fever, you know, like the scenes with Beth and Joe at the beach are wonderfully shot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the camera work, everything in this and the score is really, really pretty. Like everything about it is very well done. So I think, you know, it definitely I would put it in at least near my top 10 movies of the year. Yeah, do you have any other thoughts on this film overall before we get into some comparing?
I mean, are we just comparing or are we talking about what we didn't like about this film?
Oh, I mean, well, I kind of feel like the big thing you're going to talk about is like kind of in with the comparison, right?
Well, yeah, sort of, but I mean...
Well, then, yeah, let's just go for it.
Okay, so there was one thing, like, you said to me, like, in the middle of this movie, like, what did you think the order of the girls' ages was when we watched this? Who was the oldest?
Well, I definitely felt like... I felt like Emma Watson was the oldest.
Okay, that's right.
I felt like Joe was the oldest in this movie.
Right.
I felt like Joe was the oldest, and I felt that Beth was the youngest.
Correct.
That is okay. What I thought was the ages here. And, you know, like, admittedly, I don't know the story as well as everyone else, but so I didn't.
Sure, no, but that's good, though. Like, that's something that, like, just kind of bugged me about it, because it was like... There's a very clear, like, order of their ages, and, like, it's kind of like the Von Trapp children. Like, they just are, you know, the way that they each are in their roles. Meg is the oldest. She's the mothering one. Joe is the second, and she's kind of like the middle child, rebellious.
Uh-huh.
Beth's the other middle child, but she's just very content with who she is. And then Amy is the rambunctious youngest.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the roles that, like... were always, like, my grandma, like, always painted to me, like, when we read it. And it's just, that was something that, like, did not come across in this one at all.
Right.
And I just felt like, I don't... Well, and there is such a passage of time in this one.
Yeah.
And not in this one, in the story. I mean, it spans, like, 6 years.
Right.
And you should be able to see, like, those like, young teenage... I mean, like, when it first starts, like... I'd say, you know, Meg's maybe like 19, the oldest. Mm-hmm. So that puts Amy, the youngest, like 13.
Right.
And so you should be able to see her go from like 13 to 20.
Right.
And that just does not come off to me.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's another thing that Gerwig like played with, you know, like, you know, can we make them closer in ages? You know what I mean? Like maybe it's like one of those unspoken things that it's just, you know, cause obviously Sarah had, you know, your biggest issue was that Florence Pugh was like, you know, supposed to be playing this really young looking girl and she doesn't look it at all. You know, she looks like the same age as everyone else.
It's like I almost like thought it was like funny at some points. Cause I was like, this is like it seems like a 30-year-old woman, like who's trying to pretend to be 12. Like when she was wearing like fairy wings and like throwing Joe's manuscript in the fire, it was like a joke.
Yeah.
It's like Pinkalicious.
Well, there you go.
It's like adults just pretending to be little kids on stage.
The mandatory musical theater reference in a Sarah Jeremy podcast.
She has to act like a 10 or an 11-year-old. But, like, I mean, come on. Like, 13 is still young.
No, I get it. And this is because, you know, in the 94 version, they had Kirsten Dunst playing a very young Amy. And then Samantha Mathis playing an older Amy. So you got that passage of
time.
And
I'm not saying you have to use two actresses. But if you don't, then you have to at least establish some
some form of making her younger.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's why I think, like, you know, she's playing with the narrative, she's playing with the ending and stuff. Is she playing with the girls' ages here, you know? Like,
well, then are they quadruplets?
Well, I don't know, but that's the thing. It's like, they never explicitly say how old any of these people are.
I mean, there's an obvious passage of time. I even think right before Meg's wedding, they say, like, 4 years later or something.
Yeah, something like that.
So, I mean, there's an obvious passage of time that just does not show up in any of their ages.
Right.
They do. None of them look like they've aged, and it's very weird to me.
Yeah, so we haven't, you know, we haven't really gotten into the actors and their performances in this movie yet, because we really wanted to do that with the comparisons here of the 1994 version. So if you haven't seen the 1994 version, I really encourage you to see it, because it's a very good, faithful adaptation.
Right now.
Yeah, it's on Showtime. Hey,
we literally were going to watch it. We couldn't find it on Showtime or anywhere. We paid $3 for it, and literally 3 days later, it's now free.
It's now free on Showtime. So take advantage, people, because it's there. But it's a very faithful adaptation of the book. It's just dripping in that 90s style
that's
camera
one
work.
Thing I will say about it, like, I think I'm like a huge cheesy 90s movies person. Like, if given my choice, like, I'll go on Netflix and find the category movies made in the 90s and pick one to watch. Yeah. I like 90s movies.
Yeah.
And so this one is like just reeking of 90s.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's not like, you know, Not in the sense of like somehow that gets taken sometimes.
No.
No, it just looks like a 90s film. There was just a different style of shooting and lighting films back then that, you know, just gave it like that certain brighter hue naturally and stuff like that. But, that one starred Susan Sarandon, Kirsten Dunst, as we said, Samantha
Winona
Mathis,
Winona Ryder, Christian Bale.
Claire
Danes.
Yeah, a very, very big cast. But that one, you know.
Eric Stoltz.
Yeah, Eric Stoltz. The original Marty McFly himself. So that one, we watched that again, probably, what, like a day after we saw this new one.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I mean, I still really like it. I still think it really holds up. And so what we wanted to do here is just kind of character by character with the main ones here, go through, you know, the performances from that one and the performances from this one, and just see which ones we kind of liked a little bit more and, you know, which ones came out of it. So let's just start right there at the top. The main character, Joe March there, played by Winona Ryder in the 1994 one, Saoirse Ronan in this one. How would you compare these two performances?
Very, very different performances.
Very different performances. Winona's very much more kid, like,
yes,
childlike.
Yes, much more
and
bubbly,
stuff.
Much, yeah, I mean, she just has a very, I mean, Saoirse Ronan has that too in, like, the scenes with Lori when they're, you know,
right,
dancing around the party and things like that. But Winona Ryder is, yeah, she's definitely more childlike. She definitely has, like, a sunnier view of the world, I feel like.
Sure, and that might also just come from the way that the 2019 version is shot and stuff, and how the color palette we're playing with and everything. But there is, you're right, there is a rougher hue to the new one.
Right.
And so it kind of leads to that natural, you know, that natural difference there. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, and there's nothing against Winona Ryder, she's obviously a wonderful actress, but I think I do prefer Saoirse's version of this.
Sure, that's fine.
And look, I mean, God, this girl could, like, read a phone book and get an Oscar nomination. I mean, every single year she's just going to be a nominee. But this is very interesting, like, though. But you're right, two very different versions of this character.
Yeah, I feel like the 94 one, Winona Ryder's character is a lot more whiny when things happen to her. It's just, I hate it here. I need to get out. You know, Saoirse Ronan just kind of, like, her character just kind of grabs it by the balls and goes for it.
Yeah.
Winona Ryder's is more like, oh, me, poor me.
Well,
but
you're right.
But she's not bad. I mean,
no,
I,
but it's like the manuscript, I think, is burning. Is the clearest example of this, right? Because, you know, we in the 94 version, we don't really get to see much of the aftermath of it. You know, we get to see, you know, obviously she wants to beat the crap out of her and stuff. And, you know, the mom is trying, you know, Marmy's trying to, like, pull her and tell her to forgive her and stuff. But then we go right to the ice skating scene.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, we get, in the 2019 version, we get a scene of them at the breakfast table, presumably a few days after this happens. And Joe will not even speak to Amy, will not even acknowledge her existence. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly taking a toll.
Yeah,
on
she
Amy.
Does. Saoirse plays it more like silent treatment.
Yeah.
And Winona Ryder plays it like, I hate you, I'll never speak to you again. dad, I, you know, you're dead to me kind of whiny sister thing.
So, I know. Yeah, and both you and I hate the fact that, like, literally all it takes is Amy falling through the ice to, like, forgive that huge betrayal of trust.
I know. So like, I was like, oh, wow, could I be mad at my sister? It's like, easily. You ruined your life's work.
she burned your manuscript, dude. So, yeah, but, like, there's a clear, stark contrast there in how that happens. Because you're right. Winona's, like, naturally bubbliness and stuff of that. Like, right when they go back to the scene of them all in the bed, she's just, how could I not meet my sister? You know, and stuff like that. And so I think, that's just a little bit of a different style of acting from 25 years ago, you know? So I think I prefer that. But so the next one, Emma Watson's character, what's her
Meg?
Name? Meg. Meg.
She's the oldest.
Yeah. So that one was obviously played by Trina Alvarado in the 94 version. So which of these performances do you prefer?
I don't know. Meg's very...
Meg is so forgettable, man. I hate to say that, but, like, the movies have not done her very well.
Well, she's the oldest. She's a second mother kind of character.
Right.
She just doesn't... I don't know. I mean, I like this isn't anything against either actress. I like that you get to see the birth of her babies in the old one, and you kind of get to see her relationship with John Brooke is better in the 94 one.
Very much so. And look, I mean, there were some good scenes in the 2019 version.
The only thing I can remember is, like, I don't really see their courtship in the new one.
Right.
All you see is, like, the later scenes where she buys silk and they have no money.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. Like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of moments of joy in their relationship in this new one.
Right. You don't get to see, like, that. I don't know. Like, there's that whole sequence where he takes her glove and Christian Bale's like, a glove.
Glove.
And it's, you know, it's just kind of cute. Like, Eric Stoltz plays him very nerdy and like he doesn't know how to talk to women, and they, I don't know, like, you can see why they fall in love,
right?
And that's something that's lacking from this one.
I 100% agree. I prefer the 94.
I just think that I don't know, I feel like then this recent one is kind of shying away from showing the girls falling in love.
Right.
It's trying to show them as independent.
Which maybe
it's
trying to show a little bit more of Joe's, you know, that version of Joe's mindset.
And that's fine, but
know?
I mean, it is a huge part of the story is these... Because, you know, they talk a lot about Meg marrying a poor man.
Uh-huh.
And why would she do this? Well, it doesn't make sense when you don't see how much she loves him.
Right, exactly.
So that is something that is lacking. But, I mean, Emma Watson, I like him. I mean, she's Hermione.
No, Emma Watson's great. She's a great actress. There's just not a lot to do with this role in this one.
Yeah, and
you know?
There's also that sequence where Meg goes to the Sally Moffat's coming out party.
Right.
And, you know, they do in the 94 when they dress. They do the same thing in this one where she only brings one dress and the girls dress her up. But you know, in the 94 one, she talks a lot to Lori about how for once it made her feel good to be.
Yeah.
I mean, they just
and
don't
in
really
this one, well, yeah, and that's a real sin of Lori's portrayal in this too, in the new one, because yeah, like we miss that there's a big camaraderie between all of the sisters.
Yeah, not just him and Joe.
Like, you know.
Like, this is his moment with Meg.
Yeah.
And it's really lost in this new one.
Yeah, and I mean, like, because, you know, Laurie is a part of the family at that point, you know? Like, and all of the girls view him that way. Amy a little bit more so. But it's, you know, like, the sense that scene, like, happens, and then it's just kind of like a brief apology. But in the 94, yeah, we get a great scene of how that affects her.
It's funny, like, he sees, like, her boobs sticking out of her dress, and he's just kind of like, you know, and it really does. She cries and she takes off her makeup and she laughs about it with him and apologizes. And he's like, you know, maybe you should put something around your neck. Like, it's just a cute little brotherly moment.
Yeah, no, you're right. It absolutely is.
And it's just, I don't know. I just feel like that's lacking. So I think they're both do well with it. I just think they give her more to do in the 94 one.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's save your violent hatred for Florence Pugh here. Let's just go with Beth here. And honestly, look, I don't really have anything bad to say about either of these actresses. Scanlon does really, really well in this one. She's kind of relegated a little bit more to the background even in the other one, even in the 94 version. It's just that Claire Danes is just so good at emoting in the first one, and like when she sees the piano for the first time.
I mean, the look on her face. Like, it's almost like she's, I don't know. The look on her face when she gets that piano in the 94 one is just like, it kills you.
No, it's absolutely wonderful. And yeah, and I mean, it's Claire Danes. She's a freaking phenomenal actress.
Eliza Scanlon does have a beautiful scene where she gets to go over to the Lawrence house and hug him for giving her the piano. Like, and that's not something that she gets, you know, she has a better connection with Mr. Lawrence in this one, I feel like, which is really nice.
Yes.
But I mean, in all accounts of the story, Beth is kind of the, the one who gets pushed aside.
She's there playing the piano,
but I don't know.
Catching scarlet fever.
Yeah, I know, but they don't really even give you, like, I don't know. She goes to the Hummels and I just feel like, she gets kind of lost.
Yeah. Well, and I will say this though, is like Scanlon gets the benefit of having those scenes at the beach that aren't in the 94 version.
I did say that to you too.
And those are wonderfully
done. Very
nice.
Yes.
Not even just, there's one shot of just the two of them, like shot from afar with the wind blowing the sands over the dunes.
Yeah, it's a stark comparison between like the sunny day with the crowded beach and then the cold day with the empty beach that really does it. And it's beautiful.
It's gorgeous to behold in this new one. But yeah, and that, it sucks that we don't get those in the 94 version, but you know, we get a lot more linear time with Beth in the 94 version as well. So I don't have anything bad to say. I think I prefer Danes's, but just, you know, if you like Scanlon's, great. Sure, I do too. So go ahead, Sarah Florence Pugh. Woohoo! Amy Moore!
No, okay.
Oscar nominated, I will remind you.
Did it not seem like they spent a hell of a lot of time on Amy and Laurie in Paris?
Yes, they did. Way too much time.
There is so much time. Like, and there is a really good scene with the two of them, like in her painting studio.
Right.
Like talking about how she was going to marry Fred Vaughn and all of that, which is a good scene between her and Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, I mean, and like, look, like this, in the 2019 version, the main story of Amy March and Laurie is kind of bucking the trend of like what was expected of women in that time, you know, to marry for family and for wealth and you know, out of a sense of duty to your family name, something like that. You know, so it's trying to juxtapose that and saying, no, like marry for love, which is something that Amy in this version doesn't really have time for or believe in at all. You know, right. She always wants to marry somebody rich and all
that's
that.
That's Amy's character.
She so, I mean, I guess that was their attempt to give her a pretty good arc here. And look, I will not say anything bad against Florence PDX. Actress. She had a wonderful year in 2019. I find it weird that this is the movie she got nominated for, because I thought her other two movies in 2019 she did better in. But
yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's Florence Pugh that's a bad actress.
Right.
I just don't like what they do with the character of Amy in this movie.
Yeah.
I just think it's weird. I feel like, I mean, it's almost like a tie between her and Joe, how much screen time they have.
No, you're absolutely right.
Where Joe is supposed to be the main protagonist of the film.
Yeah.
And they just spend a freak load of time. I mean, the main relationship with Laurie is supposed to be who?
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be Joe.
Yes.
I mean, we're supposed to really feel that heartache.
You're supposed to feel like when he proposes to her and she turns him down, like it's supposed to be like gut punch.
Yeah.
Because of how much time they spent together and how connected they were. And it
very much lands in the 94 one. That scene is brutal to watch in the 94
they spend,
one.
I mean, so much. I mean, the bond between Winona Ryder and Christian Bale, and I'll say right now, I think Christian Bale's a far better Laurie.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. I have words for Timothy Chalamet.
But they don't build that enough with the two of them.
No.
They spend so much time in the future with him and Amy.
And I think that's because of the fractured nature of the storyline we're dealing with here. Because you're right. Like, in this version, Laurie's story is primarily entangled with Amy.
I understand it a little bit, like giving him a little more time with Amy, because in the 94 one, I will say it feels odd when he marries her.
Yeah, it just kind of feels like, we're married.
Well, Meg's married. Joe said no. Beth died. I'm going to take Amy then.
I guess that leaves you.
Right.
So.
Like, and so I feel like, yeah, maybe they could have given them a little more in that version, but in this version, it's overload.
Yeah. And I mean, at least, you know, we do also get the scene, though, in the 94 version of where Laurie is escorting young Amy
to get away
Aunt March's
fever,
house and stuff, and she talks about, you know, I've never been kissed. Yeah, so I mean, like, there's some setups.
But it's weird because she's like 13.
And again, I wonder if because this 2019 version has so much more of an obvious feminine bent, that maybe that's why they wanted to put that onus on Amy, because when she is grown up in the book and in, you know, that her story is that of subverting the typical choice of the women of the day.
Right.
You know, like choosing love of Laurie over the practicality of
marrying Fred Vaughn,
which, by the way, okay, you still married an insanely rich guy.
Lawrence princes have way more money than Bond.
Yeah, so I mean, let's just understand what we're talking about here. But but you know, all of that is aside. Like, again, you know, I know that you really don't like the, you know, maybe they're playing with the ages a little bit here of Amy and stuff.
Well, it's like Amy, Amy's stuck in like a freaking like time warp. She just like never ages,
right?
Because she doesn't play it. I'm fine with her older scenes,
yeah,
because that fits. But like she plays her younger self the same way. It's just really weird. It's like an old lady pretending to be a kid, and it's freaky.
And I will say, you called out the scene in the art studio, which is legitimately great.
Yes,
it's
it is.
Legitimately well written and very well acted by two great actors. Mm-hmm. So we'll just leave it at that in terms of those. Let's get to Laurie, because you know we're naturally there. Timothy Chalamet is a wonderful actor. He really is. If you haven't seen Call Me By Your Name, you know, he's insanely good. He's got an insanely bright future ahead of him. I do not get the sense of Laurie from him in this. The scene, like I said, there's good scenes, and I, you know, we already talked about the scenes with Joe, and you're right. There's such a nice playfulness in the party scene when they're, you know, doing like that spastic
her
dancing.
But like, I don't know. Like the main thing about
he seems
their
way too stoic.
Yeah, there's like the teasing, and you just don't get that.
No, he seems way too stoic, way too serious. You know, in the '94 version, Christian Bale is like pulling them on a sled, and you know, being all rough, and
I
you
mean,
know,
he's like sharing pudding with her. Like, yeah, they're just like so. I mean, it's like automatic brother and sister.
Yeah, it's like they couldn't help but be, you know, not attracted,
all five
of them couldn't be helped but be drawn to each other. It's why they're so okay with him joining the Pickwick Society, because of course it's Laurie.
It's not a boy, it's Laurie.
So, and look, I mean, Chalamet is wonderful, but we're talking about Christian Bale here, one of the best actors on the planet. So, even as a young man, he had that bent. And you're right, like, the starkest way to compare these is that scene where Joe turns down his proposal. Mm-hmm. And Chalamet has some good moments in that, you know, but again, it's much more subdued. It doesn't seem like it's outwardly there. And maybe that's just the different styles of acting, but like Christian Bale still at least he was still quiet and stoic in those moments, but you could see the heartache just like trying to burst itself out, but he's trying to keep it down.
Even before the heartache, like you can see how excited he is to ask her.
Right.
Like it's just brimming from him. And then you can just see how like it just, how crushed he is, but he's still just, he holds it in and he has that line about like, I will see you marry, you will marry, even though you say you won't, and I will have to watch. And it's just like.
Yeah. And I mean, the way that Chalamet says that is a lot more like, you know, again, just very subdued and just like, you will marry and I'll watch. And, you know, it's a great line, you know, Alcott, you know, she should have been a writer, I guess. You know, but like, I don't know. I just, you're right. Like there needed to be that natural camaraderie between all five of them. And you don't get enough time to really feel that in this movie.
And again, with the aging thing, he literally is supposed to go from like being a tutored high school student to having graduated college, like running a business, being an adult. And Timothy Chalamet looks 16 the whole time.
Dude, they put a mustache on him. What more do you want?
Not as good of a scumstache as Christian Bale.
As Christian Bale has. All right, well, let's keep it rolling here. Marmy, we've got Susan Sarandon versus Laura Dern. Laura Dern's great in this. She really is. Yep. I've always loved Laura Dern, and I feel like, I don't know, I've kind of been like late to the party maybe, but like, you know, because apparently she's had 7 Golden Globe nominations, which both you and I are like, for what?
Just like Jurassic Park?
She doesn't do a ton of movies, and you know, in the mid time there, but she's really making a great comeback.
We just watched.
I don't know if you want to even call it a comeback. I mean, she's just kind of like out there again.
She just picks really interesting projects.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. Like, she's already racked up a Critics' Choice and a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress for Marriage Story. And as Marmy in this, I think she's fine. You know,
she's very cheery.
Yeah, and but
she's
also
role model.
Yeah, but and even again though, she doesn't have kind of the natural warmth of Susan Sarandon.
I feel like,
in that one.
Yeah, I feel like the two performances should have been flopped, because like this whole 2019 one is about like the feminist outlook, and that's all Susan Sarandon does in this 94 one.
Oh,
is give like a million feminism morals.
No, you're right. It's
so
really,
it's really
weird.
Weird to me that that's the way that it rolls, because like Susan Sarandon uses like her Marmy uses every like fight or every like whatever happens to each girl she uses it to like to prove a a point
yeah.
and to give her girls a moral. There's like several scenes of her like sitting on the bed, brushing their hair and telling them about, you know, how it is for women in these times, but how they need to.
Well, and she has a very candid conversation with the Eric Stoltz as mm-hmm. well, you know, Brooke. About that.
Yeah, she's not afraid to speak her mind. She just says it.
She just
and Meg's always like, Marmee.
Yeah.
But she just doesn't, she just lets it go.
Yeah, you're right. It's very strange that they're that way. But I mean, like, Dern does have some great little moments there, especially where she talks to Joe about, you know, do you think I'm happy all the time? Like, you know,
yeah.
stuff like that. And again, you know, it's a grittier take, you know, it's not like, you know, we're not talking like Joker gritty, but you know, it's a dimmer take on the tale.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like Laura Dern just kind of has a little bit more seeming under the surface, you know, in this
yeah.
one. And it's a lot more like that, not suffering, but you know, like just like kind of like doing her a lot, but you could still see a lot of the caring and stuff. There's that great scene where she's working the charity line with, mm-hmm. with the former slave and stuff mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. talking about how ashamed she feels and everything. Like, you know, there's great little moments.
I mean,
she is
married to Saul Goodman.
Yeah, that's a...
Bob Odenkirk, really?
Bob Odenkirk, very weird choice. I mean, I love Bob Odenkirk.
So do I, but it's like Mr. March.
Yeah, there he is. Saul. Saul's here.
He's Artillery Arthur.
Yeah, exactly. I think I do prefer Susan Sarandon's, and I agree with you. I really would have liked to have seen her iteration in this version with
yeah.
Greta Gerwig's, but I think I would prefer her a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, they're both good, but Susan's, I don't know, she just has that, she has the warmth in all of the things that Laura Dern has, but she just takes it to a little higher level, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like her role model for her girl, like, for her girls is just, it's just, like, really outstanding.
Yeah.
Like, her strength and, like, her moral fiber is just exudes through
yeah.
Susan Sarandon's adaptation.
And I will say, both of these actresses play the Marmee coming back to care for Beth scene very
oh,
well.
Oh, when she just, like, busts in.
Yeah, and it's like, everybody, like, all of the girls are so, you know, not sure what to do. And in both versions of this, Marmee just comes in and is like, okay, come on. And, like, doesn't wait, doesn't say, like,
here,
like, yeah, so, like, oh, hi, I've been gone for months. It's just like, nope, come on.
Like, yeah.
And she just gets right to work. And it's quite amazing in that
yeah.
regard. So a couple more characters here.
Aunt March.
Look, much love to Sister Mary Lazarus.
Mary Wicks.
But it's Meryl Streep. Guys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
It's Meryl frickin' Streep. She has some great, great one-liners in this. But I honestly, what I love the most about her iteration of Aunt March in this is her looks, especially in the Paris scenes with Amy. Amy tells her that she's turned Fred Vaughn down, the look is just fantastic. It's not like mean, it's just kind of like, oh god.
Mary Wick plays her as kind of like a crotchety old lady. Meryl Streep plays her as like, I mean, she's a stone cold spinster, but she has her beliefs and she really does want what's best for this family.
Right, but if she's going to let them know that that's the case.
Right,
you know,
right.
She's going to be her tough exterior and that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah.
And it works very, very well. And I don't have much more to say. I mean, Aunt March doesn't do much in this version.
No, I mean, they give Meryl Streep a little more, but yeah, that's an easy call.
Yeah, and another easy call for me is Chris Cooper's Mr. Lawrence.
Sure, yeah. He gets to do a lot more
in this 2019 version, but I mean, it's just God, like especially the scene after Beth has died and he can't go in the house and stuff. And it's not even played as like a, you know, intense like breakdown moment. It's literally, he's just this man who doesn't want to be there. You know, he doesn't want to go in there without her.
And yeah. I mean, I love too when he tells her that, you know, no one will be home and she come over and use the piano and he just quietly sits on the steps and listens.
And listens,
it's just really
her.
Sweet.
And I think he like puts his hand on his heart and stuff.
Yeah. The Mr. Lawrence, and I don't even know who plays in the 94 one. He doesn't do as much, but I mean, he's good too. He has some nice moments with Claire Danes, but they give Chris Cooper a lot more to do and they just make him a lot more sensitive and
yeah.
a bigger part of the story and a bigger part of Laurie's life.
Yeah, exactly. And I loved that, you know, the scene where they're packing up Marmee and this one to go to care for her husband.
Yeah.
I just love that, like, you know, Mr. Lawrence is there and Laurie's there and they're all just running around ramshamble and like putting this thing together, like, you know, and then Mr. Brooke like then comes in, he's like, okay, I'm gonna take you, and he's like,
well,
oh,
they
here
do that
like,
in 94
yeah but I know but I just love the way they shot it in this one and how it just seems so like, you know, everybody's coming in with like, and I'll do this like but it was, I just thought that Chris Cooper was so good. And man, I just feel like he's never fully appreciated. I know he's won an Oscar and I know everybody loves him and stuff
because he says, turn him loose.
loose.
You turn them loose. Time to kill everyone. Go watch it.
That's my favorite part.
All right. I think that's...
Oh, no. Professor Bear.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
I mean...
Unleash the beast, Sarah. Unleash the beast.
Professor Bear is a huge character in the latter part of Joe's life.
Yeah.
And he's the one that, like... really encourages her as a, like, as a professional writer. I mean, her sisters and her mother always do, but it's different coming from a man and B, someone outside of your family.
Right.
And so you don't get any reason to, like, care about this person.
No, we get like three scenes with this
and
guy.
One of them is him just telling her that he hates her writing, basically.
Yeah. Which I did appreciate how that actor played that, because it was very just kind of like, oh, no one's ever told you this before, have they? You know, something like that.
But. Yeah, but it's just like, in the 94 one, it's Gabriel Byrne.
Which, I mean, come on. Love you guy here, but it's Gabriel freaking Byrne.
I like the contrast between their ages, because that's supposed to be there. And he just, you get a lot more time, like, to see, you know, he takes her to like, to his meetings. Like, he has this, like, men's group that he's in, and he takes her, and encourages her to, like, speak up and show her intelligence, and I love that.
And our boy Donald Logue is impressed by her, you know?
Yeah, and he takes her to the opera, and he tells her, you know, I mean, he tells her the same thing about her writing, but he does it in more of a... This is what you want to write.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. And again, that's the big problem with how they do him in this. And look, if it was a narrative choice because you don't want Joe to be tied to a man or whatever, fine. If you're using him as a device at the end as opposed to a real character. But we get so much more time to see how much he actually cares for Joe in the 94 version.
And vice versa.
Yeah, and that you're right. Like, when he says it, it's not just like, oh, you know, I don't like this and stuff, but he's saying, like, you're meant to write more than this.
Yeah.
You're meant for something bigger than
that.
This.
He's just saying, like, you need to be writing something. You need to be writing from the heart. You need to be writing what you know instead of these fantasy stories.
Yeah, and I think in the weird, like, look at the camera letter sequences that Gerwig uses in this, I think he does kind of relay that in
the 2019.
Yeah,
but he's just so stoic.
Yeah.
He just has, like, okay, so when he shows up at her home later after she's gone home to take care of Beth and she doesn't come back to New York, like, why would he do that, come all that way, if he didn't, you know, care about her in some way, or, you know, even, like, Gabriel Byrne is obvious, they're obviously in love with each other by the time she leaves.
But you're right, like, he has a purpose for coming and bringing her book.
Her manuscript. But see, this guy doesn't even bring it to her. He just shows up there, and it's just like, you don't even know that there's, like, hardly any connection between these two, and her sisters are, like, encouraging her, like, go after him. Like, why?
Why? Because he exists?
Because he is a man, and I'm single? You want me to be a spinster? Like,
I guess.
It just loses all. I mean, I get, like, it.
But again, to that point, if Gerwig's point is to say that, like, you know, now Joe doesn't end up with this guy, this is just a device of the book, you know, I guess that kind of makes sense in how they're using him. But you're right, though. Like, that relationship is pretty.
Just cut the character if you're going to do that, though.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about it.
I guess.
Because, like I said, they did him dirty.
Yeah.
Because he is a foreign man, and he does, like, have sometimes a hard time articulating what he's trying to say because of the language barrier, and he's, you know, but no, this guy, I don't know. He even, like, looks kind of mean. I just don't like it. And I don't know. I have a soft spot for the ending of the 94 one with her running out there and to thanking him and them being under the umbrella.
Yeah,
and then he says, you know, congratulations on your marriage. And she's like, no, that was Amy.
No.
And he's like, but I have nothing to give you. My hands are empty. And she holds his hands and says, they're not empty now. And it's just so sweet. It's just heartwarming.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Joe, I mean, it's not, I don't like the ending because she ends up with him. I just like the way that it plays out.
Yeah.
And it's just very sweet. Even if they didn't end up married, it's just a very sweet moment, you know, of this man coming all this way because he sees something in her.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, that's not even how it happens in this one with how he encourages her to write the book. Like, this one's just like, it gets published because the publisher's daughters like it.
Right.
It's not him saying right from the heart, but when he reads her, she sends Little Women to him to read, and he tells her, this is the best thing you've ever wrote. I couldn't put it down. It's just wonderful. And that completely crushed it. I hated that in this one.
Yeah.
I didn't like what they did with him at all.
Yeah.
I just thought they made him completely stoic and, like, kind of creepy.
Yeah, and I can totally see that. I will call out, I did love the scene of when he plays Beth's piano in there. Sure. And I mean, it wasn't even just for him, but like when he plays it and they go around to all the faces of the family members and you know, there's just that like kind of happiness but sadness and melancholy. Kind of like
there's music in the house again, but it's not Beth.
Yeah, but I mean, like that was just really, really well done by all the actors.
But that's really all he did.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's like, "Ooh, go get him!" It's like,
why?
Okay, sure. But again, I guess if that's the point Gerwig's trying to make, that's the point she's trying to make. You know, I don't think I have any more to say here on either of these films here. I think, you know, we've kind of outlaid how we think about each of these. I think that you're probably still a preferer of the 1994 version.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I mean, this one didn't, like, ruin it for me or anything. Like, I like it, but if I had to choose between the two, yeah, I'm watching Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. It, for me, the book is better embodied in the 94 one.
Yeah.
But I understand what they're trying to do with the new one, and it does a good job of it, and it has some really nice moments, but it just overall, I think like the Amy thing, I kept leaning. We were like in a really big, it was the opening weekend of it, and we were still in a tiny theater. I don't know why they did that.
And it was packed.
We were like, there was like no room to move, and I'm like hugely pregnant, so I can't like shift at all. So that probably didn't help at all either, but I just remember I kept leaning to
you. Took it all out on poor Florence Pugh.
Like during the Amy, did you not agree with me a little bit on that though?
I did. It was a joke, man.
And like then like I was reading like some like articles on it online, and there were a lot of comments from like Little Women lovers saying the same thing, like, what the heck?
She gets an Oscar nomination, enraging all of you.
I know. And I don't mean to take it out on the actress. I don't like the way the character was portrayed. I think it was very odd.
Sure. Okay.
A very odd choice.
Well, odd choices aside, there you go, folks. That is your breakdown of 2019 and 1994's Little Women. It is nominated for 6 Academy Awards, and we will be discussing those at length in our category spotlights. So this is part of what is going to be happening this year with the Oscar spotlights. We're going to be giving you these breakdowns of the movies, the big nominated films. Then in the week leading up to the Oscars, literally every single day, you're going to get a new episode breaking down 4 categories that are going to be decided at the Oscars. So each new day, 4 new categories on the episodes, and then we will arrive on February 9th, the day of the ceremony. And of course, this is our opportunity to tell you, we will be doing once again the live Oscar party at the Hoagland Center for the Arts on February 9th. Come on out, get a ticket. You can bring all of your own food, all of your own booze if you want to. We'll be doing lightning round trivia on every single commercial break. We will be doing live reactions on Facebook Live all throughout on all the commercial breaks as well. And it's just going to be special guests, everything. We're going to continue to be all over the place with the Oscars. So the coverage is going to be intense over the next 3 weeks. Make sure you don't miss any of it by following us on Facebook and Instagram, the Front Row Network, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter, or of course at frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. Sarah, do you have anything else you would like to say to everyone on Little Women or anything else in life?
Nope.
Oh, look at that. Short, sweet, easy to remember. All right, everyone. That is going to do it for this episode 4 of the Front Row Network. I am Jeremy Gechner.
I'm Sarah Baltus-Fitch-Gechner.
And as always, we'll see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.